But I wanted to sell so badly, I would not take a no. So I knew I had to go and design my own boats. I had to build my own boats. People looked at my boat and said, that thing will never cross an ocean. I was approaching hurricane strength winds. I would hold my breath, and sometimes I couldn't hold my breath long enough. I fought to the very, very end. 2 days later, I saw Cape Horn. I couldn't believe that I'd actually just achieved it. I just sailed around the world.
I was a child with a dream. I was a boy who tried to dream. I have now become a man who has succeeded at the dream, and you are part of my success. I want to say thank you very much.
Please welcome award-winning author and adventurer, Neil Peterson.
You have heard about people who carry baggage. Well, I'm going to tell you about a choice you have, a treasure chest. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, a treasure chest. The only difference between bags and a treasure chest is going to be in the content. You will get to decide the content as you go through your life. I'm going to share with you my story. I have what I call my three advantages. You're going to wonder why I call them advantages, but bear with me. I also have a philosophy that in my life, there are no barriers, there are only solutions. I repeat, in my life, there are no barriers, only solutions. And hence, advantage number one. I was born in apartheid South Africa, in a country was determined based on the color of my skin, what school I could go to, where I could live, what job I could hold, or how much I could earn. Advantage number two. I was born in a working class family. My father was a factory laborer. My mother was a school teacher. And you know from society that factory laborers and school teachers do not earn much money. But our household was not a working class household of dreams. We were just that financially. Advantage number three, you see, I can walk today, but I do not take this for granted because I could not always walk. When I was born, I did not get the socket in the ball and socket hip joint in the left hip. So I spent the first 5 years of my life in and out of hospital. The last operation left me in a plaster cast from my ankle to my chest. If I wanted to see a different view, a nurse or a doctor had to pick me up and move me around. Now you hear me speak about these three advantages, but in this sentence you hear me speak about prejudice, economic hardship, and a physical disability, and you're wondering, how on earth are these three things advantages? Well, those three things are advantages when you have a philosophy that in your life there will be no barriers. You will find solutions. When you look at the things that you've overcome, we have a hand of cards that was given to us. But it's how we play the hand of cards is what matters. It is our attitude. And hence, I have chosen that in my life, there will be a treasure chest and not baggage. When you can take these horrible things and put them behind you and carry no chips on your shoulder, that is how we will turn these disadvantages into advantages. And by recognizing that whatever life throws at us, we will be strong, we will overcome. And so I ask you, when you woke up this morning, did you wake up smiling? Come on, did you wake up smiling? Yes, because here at IAA, you have dreams, you have goals, you have ambitions. There's a reason why we wake up every day. And we have to live each day as if it's going to be our last. Because one day, you will be right. And so, as this child, there was no time to feel sorry for myself. A doctor one day came into my hospital room and said, son, what are you interested in? And I said, boats. You see, I grew up in a coastal city, Cape Town, South Africa. I heard the stories from my father who had been at sea himself. And so hence it was natural for me to be drawn towards the ocean and boats. A few days later, this doctor showed up with a bunch of sailing magazines. And when I fumbled through those magazines, a vision was born. A vision of the sea. A vision of a future with potential. I did not see the barriers of what I had to overcome. I saw the goals that I was setting myself that I wanted to achieve. I knew that in the back of my mind, I want to explore the waters. I want to be a diver. I want to be a sailor. I want to travel. Those were seeds planted from that magazine. But as a kid, when I shared some of those dreams with my school friends hobbling around on my crutches, what do you think they did? They laughed at me. They said, "You can't do that." And so I retreated to a treehouse and I started reading. And one day I read this book. I was 11 years of age when I finished Joshua Slocum, Sailing Alone Around the World. And I knew when I finished this book that I am definitely going to own a boat. I am definitely going to want to make something happen. So I remember going to my father and saying, "Hey, Dad, can you have a boat, please? Can you have a boat?" But on the money my father was earning, could he afford to give me a boat? By the way, at that time, my father was earning about $70 a week. Boats cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. My father couldn't give me that boat. But my mother said, "Son, stay reading. Never give up those dreams. The application of knowledge will give you the power to live whatever those dreams are." So I said, "Dad, will you take me to the local yacht club?" Now let me tell you about the local yacht club. Rich, elitist. It was called Royal Cape Yacht Club. I leave the word royal in your mind. And I went to this yacht club and I decided that I was going to become a yachtsman. The only time somebody from my community showed up in this yacht club was to wash dishes or fix broken gear on the decks of these boats. Not as an equal competitor. And I went from boat to boat saying, "Please, will you take me sailing?" "No." "Come on, will you take me sailing?" "No." "Please, will you take me sailing? Please, will you take me sailing?" "Yes, you will." "Yes." But look at all the no's I had to go through to find a yes. And guess what? When I got on that boat, after all of that, I got seasick. But I read that even the world's best sailors, that they have had seasickness and they overcome their seasickness by being involved. I could not take those moments for granted. I did not know when I would next have an opportunity to be on that boat. So hence, we have to seize each moment. When you have a goal, when you have a vision, you don't just achieve it once and be satisfied. You want to have it again and again and again. How many years of your parents? Yes. So when you say to your children, when they ask for something, when you say to your children, "No, you can't have that," or "No, you can't do that," do they jump to attention and say, "Yes, sir, sure, Mom, sure, Daddy, you're right"? No. They have passion. They have energy. And their job is to weigh you down until you cave in. Well, think back to when you were a child. Did you just sit back and accept no for an answer? You did not cave in. You kept working on those dreams. I got on that boat because as a child I had these powerful visions and dreams to accomplish. But why? Why when we become adults, we allow no at face value. We allow that passion to be taken away from us. We've got to bring that passion back. And we've got to fight for the things that we believe in. And change the world each day. One day at a time. By seizing the moment. I love being on that boat. I became the best that I could be to offer value. You can't just show up and expect that you can be welcome. You become welcome by the value you bring. In your organizations, in your insurance companies, you don't show up to pick up a paycheck. You bring value. As IT professionals, you know the value of the technologies that you control. We've got to continue to add value to who we are and what we do each and every day of our lives. But there will always be those who say, "You can't do it. You can't do it." When I shared those dreams with my school friends, they said, "You can't do it. You cannot be a yachtsman. Boats cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. You'll never be rich enough. You'll never, and with these excuses." Well, I believe in the power of visualization. when you can see what you're working towards, when you have a symbol that that will represent your success, you have the energy and the motivation. And so I got a red sailing jacket, and this became my visual. I hung it where I could see it, and I said to myself, one day I will own a boat and I will wear this jacket as a symbol of my success. And so each time the critics put me down, I looked at the jacket and I said, we will be partners one day. It's not about where you are. It's about what you envision for your future. Not just for yourself, but for your organization too. What visuals do you have that will remind you of how far you're going to come in the course of your life? I ended up learning to dive for my father. People in the yacht club drop things overboard. I would dive down in a swimsuit and retrieve it, and before I handed it back to them, I said, no ma'am, no sir, that was $5. At age 13, I began to build my first company because I knew to own a yacht was going to take economics. And in order to have the economics, I had to have an education. That education began by knowing that I wanted to take scuba lessons. And so the money I saved through my snorkeling enabled me to take scuba lessons. The money I was able to earn because I could now rent equipment and do more sophisticated jobs in the yacht club enabled me to buy my own equipment. And you build one success upon the next until eventually my goal was to go to commercial diving school in Los Angeles, California. When I said that to my school friends, they said, you'll never get there. Well, I'd love to have seen the expression at age 17, 1985, when I showed up in California and sent them a postcard from Disney World. And all my postcards said, I wish you were here too. But life is a journey. And we have to have a roadmap. I knew that having a commercial diving education meant high sophisticated jobs, high earnings. That money I was earning, I did not go and waste it on drugs, on alcohol. I saved that money because I was getting closer to realizing the vision of the boat. But then reality. I looked at how much these yachts cost with inflation. And I realized the amount of money I was saving. When I divided that money into the cost of these boats, I realized I would be 68 years of age before I could afford the boat. Well, none of us want to wait until one day so far in the future before we can afford to do anything. We want to do these things whilst we are young, whilst we have our health, whilst we have our abilities. Again, like with IAA, you have to have a plan, a roadmap. And so my roadmap involved me returning to libraries, back to reading books. This time the books were on naval architecture, how to design, and then how to build my boat. People said, you're no designer, you're never going to make it. But once more, the power of the vision. Not only was I going to design this boat, my goal was to race across the oceans of the world. You see, as a youngster, I got to hear this name, Harry Mitchell. He was one of my heroes. There was several races across the Atlantic Ocean, and Harry was one of the godfathers and the granddaddies of these races. I wanted to race in the O-Star against Harry Mitchell. And whilst I was a youngster in this yacht club growing up, the first round the world race took place. And the third competitor who came ashore, he had been at sea for months. He had not been onto the land yet when he said, I need some help. I hopped onto the boat to give him a hand. Immediately when we finished throwing the sails, before he even had a chance to go and get a first hug from his girlfriend or talk to the media, I began asking him questions. How do you do this? How do you do that? This individual answered every one of my questions and reinforced. He said, if you want to race around the world, you must do the O-Star. So, a tangible goal, a short-term goal. And when I'd finished asking all these questions, he said to me, if you have any more questions, come back, I'll be glad to answer them. What this individual did not realize he was doing, he had taken a little seed, a little acorn, and he had planted the fertilizer, the sunlight, and the water, and he gave me the chance to blossom. But it was up to me to grow and to choose whether I will be a sapling or one day a mighty oak. It was about the opportunity. And so I knew the O-Star. So this boat I was creating to take in the O-Star. And finally, after 2 years designing, And after 2 years of building the boat, I finally put on the red jacket and climbed onto my boat. I was a proud owner. And the people, the wealthy yachtsmen, walked past my boat and were talking about my boat. When you compared my home-built boat to these factory-built machines, my boat looked like a heap of junk. I didn't have the fancy equipment, the fancy paint job. And one day, a very well-known banker who was well-known for financing boats, who turned me down, was walking with a well-known hotelier. And they were walking over to this hotelier's 100-foot yacht. And they were talking about my 38-foot boat, which I had just launched. My heap of junk. And I stood on the deck very proud and I said, "Sir, is your boat fully paid for?" "Because mine is." I was unbankable. But I knew that somehow I'm going to pull through all of this. When the South African media asked me what my intentions were and I explained to them, they said, "He's going to kill himself in this boat." So my boat became nicknamed the Floating Coffin. You know, we all have choices. We can stay and allow these critics to hold us back, push us down. You all know about those critics. I know many of you have experienced them. Sometimes those critics are your competitors who say, "Oh, you're just some little company. We can't be bothered dealing with you. We're just going to crush you." Beware of those with the hunger and the fire in their belly. We are uncrushable. We will burn bright. And so I had a choice. I had a choice to climb on my boat and bid my family goodbye and sail across the Atlantic Ocean bound for Plymouth in England to go and do the O-Star. But ladies and gentlemen, I had a challenge. You see, I did not have access to technology as you do. I had no money. I was broke at that point. My boat was paid for, but I had nothing left. So with the last few pennies, and I'm talking about pennies, I bought a couple of things and I set sail. I bought a sextant, the age-old way that mankind has navigated across the oceans for hundreds and hundreds of years. I had no idea how to use this device. I had no idea how to navigate. So I bought a book, Celestial Navigation for Yachtsmen. Now don't ask me where I was for the first 10 days. I was lost. I was busy reading this book, trying to figure out how to use this device. IAA, it's about having faith. It's about having faith in yourselves. We do not have all the answers in life. You know where you are today. You know where you want to take your companies. But in order to get there, you have to know what questions to ask and who to ask of those questions to help you in the journey. This is about a journey. And that is why you belong to this family, part of the IBM family. Because through IAA, you have a roadmap of IT solutions to help you get to those destinations. These were some of my tools along the way. But my challenges were far from over as I crossed the ocean. I had not spoken to a human being in 35 days. I had a short-range radio that could reach another ship if I could find a ship to talk to. And so on the 35th day, I stood tall, looking to see if I could see a ship. I was approaching the equator. I was 800 miles from the Cape Verde Islands, a major shipping lane. And I thought I saw a ship, so I stood very tall. When the next thing, the boom, the thing that carries the sail, the mainsail, came flopping across the boat. And I stood at the wrong moment, just as a golf ball sitting there on the tee, and a golf club coming swinging at the ball. My forehead was the ball. The boom made perfect contact with my forehead. It struck me down. I was laying on the deck. I was gushing blood. I was dying. I had a barrier. I had no medical kit on my boat. I'm 800 miles from the nearest doctor. I had no systems, electronic systems on my boat. I could flip a satellite button, say, "I'm in trouble." I was truly alone out there on the middle of the ocean, dying. But in life, there are no barriers. It was not going to be my time. I knew I had to find a solution. We will drive to solutions by whatever it takes. All I had on my boat was a rusty sailing needle. This very needle. Could you stitch your eyebrow back together with this needle and twine? Could you? Nope. Nor could I. So we had a problem. But I'm not going to die. So I'm sitting there and I'm racking my brains. I can see the bone. I'm gushing blood. And then I remembered in science, I remembered from knowledge, that if you have a bleeding wound and you hold and you apply pressure to the wound, what happens when you apply pressure to the wound? It's going to stop bleeding. And if you can hold that wound together for a long enough period of time, the wound will coagulate. It will go back together again. So I knew, apply pressure, hold it together, apply pressure, hold it together. So I got a clothespin, or clothes peg as we call it in South Africa. It held the wound together, it applied the pressure. I sailed 800 miles to go and see the doctor. The doctor looked at my wound and said, son, your wound is fine, but you need psychiatry help. Once more, a symbol. A symbol of what I've overcome. A symbol of the application of knowledge to find solutions. Whatever is thrown at you in this industry, what solutions will you find? Through what creative methods? And in the IT world, those creative methods are right there in solutions, in software. It's waiting for you to reach out and take it. I continued staying focused on that dream of entering the O-Star race. Nothing was going to hold me back from it. I had more damage, more challenges. I won't bore you with the details. I ended up eventually, years later, in England. And in 1992, I got across the start line of the O-Star. And I got to race against Harry Mitchell, my hero. At this point, he was not just my hero. He was becoming my mentor. I crossed the finish line in the United States at the end of that race, and Harry beat me across the finish line. South Africa said that I got lucky. I got lucky that I finished. Ireland, where I was living at the time, said, son, when do you come back to us? But one of the big questions remained. Now that I've achieved this goal, and achieved this major milestone in my life, what next? Where do you go after you achieve one level? Do you give up the game? No. You find a new vision, a new set of dreams, a new set of rules. I chose that I would enter the Round the World race in 1994. And so I rushed back to Ireland because I wanted to race and beat Harry Mitchell because he was going. And in Ireland, we tried to find economics so I could build a brand new boat for the event. The country wasn't wealthy enough to give me that luxury. So we scrambled to find economics to buy a second-hand boat. And still we came up short of the money. The clock was ticking away. Time was running past us. How do I get to the start of this race without a second-hand boat? And sometimes the most obvious solution stares us in the face. I will take my old boat. The Round the World race minimum size requirement was 40 foot. How big was my challenge? Just 2 feet. I had a 38-foot boat, subtract 30 from 40, is 2 foot. I got some fiberglass, some plywood, some epoxy glue. We stretched the back of my boat, we repainted the boat, and I showed up at the world's greatest yacht race in my 40-footer. I raced across Atlantic in the feeder race, and again, Harry beat me. I arrived in Charleston, South Carolina, at the start of the world's greatest single-handed yacht race. I had seen the competitors in the years gone by. I had met that competitor in the very first race who said, you can do it. And here I stood as one of the competitors, believing that I could do it. But I was broke. I was struggling. But I was going to the start line no matter what. The first leg of the race was from Charleston, South Carolina to Cape Town, South Africa. I had a girlfriend who had been with me for 4 years at that stage. She helped me prepare the boat and sent me on to South Africa to meet me. 68 days later, I arrived in Cape Town to beat Harry Mitchell across the finish line. Harry came last and I came second last. It doesn't matter about where you come. What matters is about being in the game. If you're going to excel, if one day you're going to lead, you've got to play. You've got to apply the principles to realizing the vision. You've got to stay the course. The following day after Harry had come in, we only had 2 days in port. The fleet had left, and I charged on down to the Southern Ocean. Harry was just slightly ahead of me when a bad storm came along. My boat ended up getting turned upside down. When it came back upright, my mast was broken. With the breaking of my mast was the breaking of my ability to finish the 94 Round the World race. My last communication with Harry was, go finish the race for me. I have to go back. South Africa once more said, you couldn't do it. But there were people in South Africa who believed in me, who were willing to give me a chance to make a comeback. So with some resources from a few companies, I was able to find a new mast. But on my way back to South Africa, I had a laptop on my boat that had ended up in the water. I ended up pulling all these pieces out, and it was an IBM ThinkPad. I pulled this machine was totally destroyed. Pulled it apart, dried out the battery, dried out the hard drive, and about 3 days later, I reassembled this machine, fired up the button, and it worked. And it stayed working for 2 more years until eventually the software became too complex for the machine. But you know what? That machine gave me the hope. That machine gave me the ability to plan into the future. I'm always amazed by what IBM has been able to create. The problem solving that this company has done, that's given me the tools to keep going. And so, I ended up sailing from South Africa to South America with my IBM ThinkPad and the new mast. And midway across, devastating news. My friends, the stress system had been activated. Harry Mitchell was in trouble. The Chileans launched their search. They couldn't stay in the search area, it was so bad. They tried to send a ship into the area. The winds were in excess of 100 miles an hour. Eventually, his distress system went quiet, and Harry failed to arrive in port. Harry was lost on his approaches to Cape Horn, 1,800 miles in an area called No Man's Zone, midway across the Pacific Ocean. My friend was 68 years of age when he died. But he left behind a very powerful message. You see, this was his third attempt to race around the world and to get to Cape Horn. He left behind this powerful message. Seize every day. Live each day as if it's going to be your last. Make those dreams, those ambitions, reality whilst you have the ability to do it. When his death came, I realized that we will make every day count. And we will wake up smiling each and every day. And so with a heavy heart, I sailed the last leg of the race in memory of my friend from Uruguay back to the United States. My girlfriend flew back to meet me in the States. And once more, what next? I'm out of the round the world race, I'm going to come back. But in the meantime, I have 4 years to kill. And so this time, I decide to enter the O-Star for a second time. The race from Plymouth, England to Newport, Rhode Island. I'm taking the same boat. And I'm heading across the Atlantic, and I'm midway across the Atlantic Ocean, when guess what? I get hit by a Russian freighter and my boat is sinking. And I have a huge hole in my boat. But once more, I had a choice. Do I abandon my boat and climb onto the freighter? Well, I couldn't afford replacement insurance on my boat. I would lose everything. When you have a child that's ill, do you abandon your child and say, I'll have another one? No. You do what it takes to survive. And so I got a pump. And every hour, I would go to the front of my boat and I would start to pump. I'd pump for about 20 minutes out of each hour. Get that water out of the boat. Then I'd go up on deck and trim my sails and point it towards land. I'm in a hurry to get there before the boat fills with more water and I run out of energy. So within the hour, I'd go back and pump again. I'd pump for 20 minutes every hour, 24 times a day. I did this for 15 days. Maria, is this not hard work? Yes, but hard work pays off. I crossed the finish line in Newport, Rhode Island. I finished third in my class. Determination, perseverance, dedication to a goal. Whatever it takes, whatever solutions you need to find, you've got to drive home those solutions. Find your pump. And with the result of that success, I was able to find sponsorship to enter the 98-99 round the world race. People said to me, you failed the last time. What makes you think you will survive and succeed this time? But was it failure? It was to me a setback. Yes, I'd lost my mast, but look at the experience. Look at the knowledge I'd gained. For you to be where you are today, you didn't just wake up one day and be brilliant. We've all had setbacks, but you have built by overcoming those setbacks. You have found solutions to enable you to keep going forth. And I crossed that start line in 1998 in my 40-footer, heading for Cape Town, South Africa, leading the fleet out of America for all of about a minute, and then the big boats overtook me, the 60-foot machines. I got to Cape Town 14 days faster. When I left Cape Town, once more my girlfriend had prepared the boat, and she was flying on to Auckland, New Zealand this time to meet the fleet. I had to sail past the place where I'd lost the mast, overcome that fear. Because yes, fear is always out there. I also had to learn that when I looked at this event, 27,000 miles, you can't look at it as one big task. You have to break it down into manageable pieces. Otherwise, it's daunting. So I broke it down into four legs. So that United States to South Africa, South Africa to New Zealand, then around Cape Horn to Uruguay, back to the finish. And then each leg, you break down into something smaller and smaller. So for example, at the start, it was how about preparing the boat and showing up on the start line on the right day? Yes, showing up. And so by showing up, I was able to sail through the first day, get through the first week, the first month. Each time you build one bite at a time, one step at a time. And so the second leg was boring. I arrived in New Zealand with no major damage. The third leg was going to take me around Cape Horn. And in a few moments, I'm going to show you a video. This third leg was frightening because this was the place I was going to have to sail past where Harry Mitchell had lost his life. Also, for hundreds of years, Cape Horn was a symbol. It was a symbol of the challenge and the struggles of the seafaring community to find ways to new markets. Every day I'm out at sea, I face challenges and risks. I calculate those risks. Those risks are whether it is breakage on my boat, whether it is being run down by another vessel, or a landfall that could go wrong, or severe weather. Each of these challenges, any one of them, could take my life. You know about challenges from competitive markets. You know about challenges from shrinking margins. You know that when the weather turns bad, it could cost you a fortune in your hurricane payouts with what Katrina has done. It's all about managing risk. We pay with our lives when we make mistakes in managing our risks. It comes back down to knowledge and experience. Hence, the IAA relationship, the knowledge and the experience. And so on my approaches to Cape Horn, I get hit by 80-mile-hour winds, hurricane strength. And instead of telling you about the approaches and the storm, let me show you a four-minute video.
We're just waiting for the breeze to slowly pick up, and at least it's good news that all three of us now can see South West Beach. That's excellent. That means that it's not just a little localised thing, as I was wondering whether it might be. It looks like it might be a little more widespread, and hopefully it can only increase from now on, Alan.
Yeah, that's a roger, and especially with the barometers falling. Manoro, is your barometer falling as well, over?
On March 11, 1999, 300 miles before Cape Horn, Neil's dream trip turns into a nightmare. A massive storm hits. Winds are as strong as a hurricane. The waves smother him as he rides out the storm in the cockpit. Tethered to the deck with a 2-foot safety harness, he pulls down all his sails and tries to steer his boat through the churning swells. Repeatedly, his boat is knocked over.
Unfortunately, this is the result of all the knockdowns. We've taken sort of gear sort of all over the place, lockers broken. So it's been pretty tough.
2 days after surviving the storm, Neil sights Cape Horn. At last, he experiences the awe others wrote about in the books he read as a child. He feels immense joy. After all, more people have traveled into outer space than have sailed past this place alone.
Well, there she is. Horn and I. What a sight. And it has been absolutely great to be here. It's taken 17 years of dreaming. It's taken a lot of planning, a lot of preparation. It's taken the support of many, many people. My sponsors, my family, were supporting Gwen. But we are here. I think of Harry Mitchell, who gave his life with this sight. And a few minutes ago, I paid tribute to my friend Harry. You know, it's a very special place, this, the bottom of the world. the edge of the world. And to get here takes courage, perseverance, determination, dedication. It takes a dream. The most powerful thing that a man, that mankind can possibly know, is to turn a dream into reality. It takes incredible hard work. But it can be done. I'm 31 years of age, and I've lived my dream now. It's taken hard work, but it was worth it. I've risked my life through 77 knots of wind storms, but it was worth it. Not every young person has an opportunity to live their dream as I've now lived mine. Look at this magic piece of land.
Of all the billions and billions of people who have lived on this planet, less than 300 people have sailed alone around the world via the Southern Ocean and Cape Horn. I am one of that unique family. And I cannot tell you why we do these things, because each one of us has a different reason for doing it. For me, it was because it was the ultimate adventure. This, what you saw, was an excerpt from a PBS documentary we had made. I had done it with onboard cameras and remote controls. I was truly alone when we filmed that piece at Cape Horn. When I arrived in Uruguay, 2 weeks after we had finished shooting that segment, I had sailed around the world single-handed, but I had not completed the race. Gwen, my girlfriend, kept asking me, as we were finishing the preparations of the boat, if the boat is ready to go to sea. And I kept saying, not yet, not yet. And finally, I said, yes, I'll be ready to go to sea tomorrow. And then she said to me, well, I'm leaving. And I said, you mean tomorrow? You're flying back to Ireland and then back to the States? And she said, no, I am leaving you. I'm ending our relationship. We had been together for 8 years. And she decided it was too much, it was time, it was over. And she walked out the day before the restart. I was devastated. Strike one in baseball. I had to climb back onto that boat and sail to the finish line, knowing that she would not be waiting for me. But you do what you have to do to finish what you set out to do. It's about maintaining the determination and dedication to the goal, keeping and staying the course. And finally, I crossed that finish line in Charleston, South Carolina. I had been at sea for 195 days, 16 hours collectively. It had been 9 months from the time the fleet had left Charleston to the time I had returned to Charleston. I sailed into the history books to become the first black man to race solo around the globe. It was a great moment being at that finish line. The night of the prize-giving party was an incredible moment, because there I was being recognized as one of this unique family, receiving this trophy for the accomplishment. In the yachting world, I had climbed the highest mountain, our Mount Everest. There was nothing left in the yachting world to achieve. So it was a great moment to be at that top, but it was a sad moment for two reasons. The one was Gwen was not there to see the fruit of 8 years of her contribution to help make that moment happen. And the second reason was, now what? What do I do with the rest of my life? I was 32 years of age when I achieved that goal. It was everything I had worked towards. It was everything that I had read in these books. When Richard Broadhead, that sailor, said to me that you can do it, I had grown from that acorn into an oak. He has no idea that I joined the same family that he was part of, an around-the-world racing sailor. But what next? And so I chose to do many things. I chose to write. And I ended up doing Journey of a Hope Merchant. And this book ended up winning the Nobel Book Award. It is a great time writing the book and retelling the story. And for those who would like copies, I do have some. I will be at the registration desk signing some copies. But still, writing a book wasn't enough. I continued in the speaking circuit. I love this job as a keynote speaker, helping people and make a difference, working with people like yourselves, because together in this world, we can make a difference. We can inspire each other to keep going forward. We can help those who are not as fortunate. And so, I traveled the globe as a speaker. But still, the question was, what next? Yes, a part of me says I will go back for one more round-the-world race. Single-handed, without stopping. France, back to France in the Vendée Globe. So I moved into a little cottage and I started the preparations, finishing the book, working on the next plan. And I went out back dating. Frightening experience. And I came home from a date one evening only to find that my house had burnt to the ground. And I lost my trophies. I lost the original manuscript of the book. I had to start all over again. And I'm standing in the ruins of my house. And a friend of mine said, Peterson, something good is going to come out of this. And I dug deep into my own soul. What good? But I believe that in life there are no barriers. Everything happens for a reason. I will find a solution. Right now, my solution was to being homeless. And when you think things are bad and they can't get any worse, think again. Because the following day, on August the 7th, the transmission in my car falls out. So I pick up the telephone and I phone a car dealer and I said, Eddie, can you find me a car? It has to fit this budget because that's all I've got left on my credit card. And he called me back the next day and he said, yes, I've got a car, you must come now. So I'm telephoning various friends asking for a lift. Can't get anybody. When suddenly my phone rings and a stranger is on the telephone asking what can she do to help. And I said, can you give me a lift to the car dealer? So she said, what time and where? So we made an arrangement to meet at 5 o'clock that afternoon. We went to the car dealer. We went to dinner. We went to a movie. And 5 months, ladies and gentlemen, she became my wife. Let me introduce you to darling Christy Peterson, my wife. You just never know. When things happen in life, everything happens for a reason. Whatever barriers we face, we have to overcome those barriers. We have a choice. We can go through life and choose to carry a baggage, or we can choose to carry a treasure chest. What we pack in our lives are our choices. It is about our attitude. It's about where do we want to go, and will we stay the course of the dream? At IAA, you have the support, the technology, the platform to do anything that you choose for your career and for your company. Never ever give up, because truly in life there are no barriers, there are only solutions. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Robin. Thank you.
Okay, so that closes our conference for this year. There are box lunches right outside. Take one as you go. We appreciate everybody coming, and we hope to see you all next year. Thank you very much.